The Right to Question is supported in part by the Paul Allen Family Foundation, by Humanities Montana, and by listeners like you.
What is a commonplace book?
A commonplace book is a form that was really popular in early modern Europe up through the 19th century. It's basically a book where you record your thoughts, you record recipes, you record sayings, aphorisms, bits of wisdom that you want to keep. Writers will probably think of their commonplace books as simply their writer's notebooks, the places where they keep scraps of images or ideas or sounds that then later become poems or essays or pieces of writing.
Welcome to The Right Question, a program that features authors from the Western U.S. I'm Cherie Newman talking with Kate Lebo about A Commonplace Book of Pie. Why did you choose the commonplace format?
It was an opportunity for me to write a book that had a bunch of different genres all put together in it. So like this book has poems, it has ephemera, it has recipes, and all these different types of writing as different things of the reader. And if it's a commonplace book, then that makes sense. That's what that sort of book would ask of the reader. But to say that this is just a straight up book of poems and then include recipes, the demands of just a book of poetry doesn't include often the demands of the recipe. So it was an excuse to basically do whatever I wanted. which you know, Carl Sagan told me I could do. He says, if you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe. So that was both my permission and my inspiration and my motivation to take that opportunity to make a book that I had never seen before in a form, in an older form.
Yeah, you certainly wouldn't see these illustrations in a book of poetry. I don't think you'd see a sack of sugar in a book of poetry.
Right.
Necessarily. Tell me about the illustrations. They're wonderful.
Sure. So Jessica Lynn Bonin of Edison, Washington, did the illustrations. She is an old friend of mine. And one of the reasons I chose to go with Chin Music Press, who makes beautiful books, was also so that I could work with Jessica, because we have a very shared aesthetic and a shared understanding of the importance of process, the importance of the everyday, how to find kind of the sublime in the everyday. Right before she started this project, The Commonplace Book, she had finished a project she called One a Day, where she was painting one watercolor a day, often of things that were just in her house or in her studio. And she has this ability to take an inanimate object and not just like elevate it to a place of worship. That's not quite right. More just look at it and look at it so carefully and with so much curiosity that those two things come through in the painting. And so the painting reinvigorates what could be a really a cliche or tired object, like a sugar bag. We all know what a sugar bag looks like, especially those CNH pink sugar bags. That these fairly commonplace, like the book, things in our kitchen that also, you know, treated in a certain way can hold a type of magic. And so in Jessica's painting, what you'll see is the very top of that sugar bag crinkled over a little bit. It's got these signs of use. You can see that the story of that bag, of someone opening it and shedding it and opening it and shedding it. And then you can imagine what they were making. You can imagine who they were making it for. So this whole narrative that the reader gets to fill in, that's just held in this iconic image that she did.
Exactly. You can look at that sugar bag or any of these other illustrations and imagine people interacting with the subject that's there on the page.
And that's exactly what I'm hoping for with the writing of this. And yeah, and also the illustrations, this interaction. For like, I included recipes in part because that's a type of writing that invites and, you know, you could even say requires a kind of interaction in order to be complete. There's absolutely no portraits of pie in this book. In order for there to be a portrait of pie, you have to make it. And the book gives you the ability to do that by giving you some recipes.
And we'll get to those. Before that, however, you have something at the very beginning of the book that says, before you begin, which is obviously an invitation to read this page. So why don't you do that?
Okay. Before you begin, The difference between superlative pie and a wish for cake is crust. Understand that pie is a generous but self-centered substance. It likes attention, not affection. Do not hug your crust. Do not rub its back or five its high. Don't fuss with refrigerators every step of the way. Keep the water and butter cold, and remember what a wise baker once said. The goal is pie.
Let's look at that sentence that says, keep the water and the butter cold. Uh-huh. I always used to keep my butter in the freezer, and you say, no, don't do that.
Don't do that. Don't do that using my method. So the method that's detailed in the book and the method that I teach people at high school is all by hand. So if you freeze your butter, you're going to break your hands trying to rub that into the flour. If you freeze your butter and you use, say, like a food processor, that's fine. It can cut right through that. What you need to have regardless is very, very cold fat that keeps its shape when it's being combined.
Because of what you called the marbling?
Yes, exactly. Right? So if you've got these little pockets of fat when it's the dough, as you roll the dough out, that becomes really thin marbled layers of fat that poof up and create flakes when you put it in a hot oven.
And you say that to get the water really cold, you don't just take it out of the tap.
Mm-mm. You put some ice cubes in it and you put it in the freezer. And by the time you are ready to use it, it will have this thin scrim of ice on the top that you can just smash with the butt of your knife. And it will perfectly pour and it will be frigid and it will do exactly what you want it to.
So these little tiny tricks are what make the best crust.
Absolutely. Pie is a folk art, by which I mean it's best taught in person. It's something that's passed down because of these tiny tricks. I recently wrote a cookbook about pie, and my master pie crust recipe is 5 pages long in the manuscript. It's like, I figure if Julie Child did it for her baguettes, I could do it as well. But it's that long because pie is so simple to teach in person. There's these little minute things that I can demonstrate to you that you will get immediately that take a sentence or two to just describe just right that had to go in that recipe.
Your list of pie here includes some that maybe everybody's not familiar with, such as mumbleberry. What's a mumbleberry pie?
Oh, I made that up.
Oh, you did?
I did.
Oh, no wonder I couldn't figure out what it was.
So a mumbleberry pie is a mixed berry pie where the baker has forgotten what kind of berries she put in it. Also, it's so good that all people can say while they eat is mumble, mumble, mumble.
Lingonberries are not so unfamiliar. They come from, do we have lingonberries in the United States or is it just in Northern Europe?
I think just Northern Europe. They're very popular in my old neighborhood of Ballard, the Swedish neighborhood in Seattle, but they don't grow there. That type of pie probably worked its way in because of my neighborhood. Imagining what that pie would be like. I've never had it, nor have I known anyone who's had it.
And there's something you said about Dolly Parton in connection with peanut butter pie. Where does that come from?
Oh, that was something I saw. I think it was online or it was in a book that she's got her own peanut butter pie recipe. That just seemed perfect for Dolly Parton, that she's over the top, sweet and savory.
And so even though most of the sections about these pies involve many sentences, that was pretty much all you said about peanut butter pie.
That was just a bit of comic relief. I mean, one of the gifts of this book is that it's taking a light subject to talk about, you know, maybe serious isn't the word, but things that really matter to me. To a lot of people. I think that the main interest in this book is to talk about desire, to talk about what we do to name what we want, what we do to figure out what we want, and then how difficult it is to just want it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's the Catholic in me.
For it to be okay.
I'm always caught between, personally, I'm always caught between what I want and what I should. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I mean. That's where the Catholic joke comes in. And I am joking and I am serious about that at the same time. But that to be stuck between want and should and trying to go towards want, I suppose.
Uh-huh. And we're not supposed to want pie?
Or we're only supposed to want a certain amount of it. Or we're only supposed to want it at certain occasions. That it is a dessert, that it is something that's for a special occasion. And to honor it for that, that it tastes, and there's these, you know, such thing as diminishing returns, right? If I have pie every day, it's not special anymore. For me, I want every piece of pie I have to be the right piece of pie, the pie that I want, not the pie that I'm just eating because I'm hungry. So that's another thing, is to feel like that just saying what you want is that's too simple. It's not about hedonism. It's about figuring out kind of within the context, what's the right thing for that situation? What things am I paying attention to intuitively or externally that tell me what to choose?
The descriptions that go with the pies, are those prose poems?
Yes, those are prose poems.
There's a little thread that I saw in a couple of them. For instance, in the peach pie and the strawberry rhubarb pie, the word fear comes in, which I thought was interesting in connection with pie. So in the peach pie, you say, there is nothing more delicious than loving what you fear. Does that kind of tie into what you were just
saying?
Yes,
absolutely. It actually comes back to this Bonnie Prince Billy lyric that I encountered about 10 years ago. He's a musician whose work I admire a lot. And the lyric doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's by dread I'm inspired, by fear I'm amused. And to me, what was important about that line was that there's a distinction between dread and between fear that has taught me over the years what I truly want out of a situation. So if I'm afraid of it, that means I want it often. But if I dread it, it's the wrong thing, you know? And so that also taught me that fear is a sign, can very much be a sign for something that you want, something that you need to get closer to, that you are afraid of it because you want it, because you are afraid of rejection or of failure or of all these, you know, human things that happen to us all the time that make us feel bad.
Oh.
You know, but that we have to approach that thing because you are afraid of it.
So the psychology of pie is in here also. Ooh, this is deep. In the strawberry rhubarb pie section, you say, fear is a scout for your soul's journey toward what it truly wants. In the pecan pie, pie lovers manage their fear of the future by playing as hard as they work. But that's part of the whole pecan story. So why don't you just read that one for us?
Sure. Okay, pecan. I'll probably say pecan three different ways while I read this.
Tomato, tomato.
All of them. Okay. Only those who will live longer than they expected to can truly love pecan pie, which doesn't explain its status as death row's most requested last dessert, or why chopped pecans, corn syrup, directions from the Carol bottle's cherry red side are what mercy tastes like to some. But there you have it. Carrie's cinematic pig's blood was made of the same stuff, sans crust and nuts, plus a tub of pigment to sweeten her psychic gore. An outsider's inside story. Other pecan pie lovers manage their fear of the future by playing as hard as they work. They distract themselves from the deadlines of birthdays with the sweetest of sweet pies, honey upon brown sugar, molasses upon fat. A pecan pie lover prepares for the worst with dessert and does not share.
This sounds like a horoscope.
Exactly. So that, you know, is kind of one of the forms that I was playing with when writing the prose poems. This idea that is absurd but fun, that, you know, your favorite pie has something to say about you. And it made me think the way we approach a horoscope, if we approach them hoping for some sort of direction that's personalized according to our talents and our foibles, that we want to be recognized in that, you know, block of text, and kind of told who we are and told what to do. And that kind of, that reminds me a lot of some of my favorite moments in literature, these moments where I feel a shock of recognition or this direction given, not in a self-help way, but because I'm recognized by the text in some way. A feeling of action or a feeling of being stirred because of that.
You're listening to The Right Question. I'm Cherie Newman talking with Kate Lebo about A Commonplace Book of Pie. After a short break, we'll find out what my favorite pie says about me. While you're waiting for that absolutely fascinating information, check out our blog at mtpr.org/twq. Mm-hmm. I looked at the list and I said, oh, key lime pie is my favorite. And then I went to key lime pie and it was the only one that had anything about books or writers in it.
Perfect. Gotcha.
And that's just weird. Uh-huh. Let's read that one. You read that one.
And it's funny, I hear that a lot from people who are reading this book, just that their piece fits them, which was my intention, but was also an impossible intention. Because I don't know who's going to read this book. I'm not in control anymore. You're in control. You know, you get to interpret it.
Yeah, that's why I said it's weird.
Totally. All right, key lime. When Annie Dillard writes, "Any instant the sacred may wipe you with its finger," she means key lime pie, which is dust, which is bone, which, according to Dillard, smells like pie. With which finger does the sacred wipe? Don't ask the key lime pie lover. He works fast, so he might deserve rest. Reads hard, so he might invent stories. Beats his own time in one-man pie-eating contests, so citrus will make the gutters of his mouth sing. The finger that wipes his lips is his.
Where do you come up with this stuff?
My head. So a lot of it's honestly is based on kind of music and intuitive collage, starting with just an association that I might have with any particular pie, a person that might whose personality might have inspired me to write something about them. Like this key lime pie, there is someone I had in mind. But the trick is, of course, it's not about him. It's to keep it open with some. And I guess I'm kind of obsessed with aphorism in the way that aphorisms, with their concision, can contain wisdom, but can also just appear to contain wisdom because of that concision. And so some of the ways that I ended up writing these sentences was trying to approach those aphorisms.
And for people who don't know, just define that word.
An aphorism is it's a wise saying. It's often a folk saying, you know. Benjamin Franklin was full of these, right?
Oh, yes.
I'm going totally blank.
Stitch
in time saves nine.
You're supposed to get up early or something
right.
like that.
No, we don't get up early. Something about worms and birds. Those are aphorisms that everyone will recognize. But there's also, you know, an aphoristic quality shares that kind of really precise images often and very precise wording. They often have a nice music to them, so that's why they stick in our heads. And it's that music that also can kind of give them the air of wisdom. They sound like they're true, and so we figure out how they're true.
I'd like you to also read the banana cream pie.
Sure. Okay, banana cream. Bad bananas are like push-up bras. A promise of tenderness can deliver tasteless mush, and we're not supposed to complain. And the filling. Will it be vanilla or caramel? Coconut or butterscotch? The difference is a matter of importance to our lover, indifference to everyone else. Banana cream pie lovers appreciate the sum of their parts, so they enjoy the unphotogenic angles of their love. The crumb mess, the toothache wakefulness, warm nights of weakness spent sugar-buzzed. They think a full and quiet mouth is a statement of joy, jeweled as a copper penny on the blue bottom of a June pool. When the banana cream pie lover quotes, "Promises and pie crust are made to be broken," he means bananas are forgivable, fallible as God intended, and cream is desire left over after what you expected proves to be smaller and closer than it originally appeared. Well, there's an embedded aphorism right there.
Exactly.
Promises and pie crust are made to be broken. And that's also some of the motivation for me for having this be a commonplace book, was trying to bring those aphorisms and those bits of wisdom and those quotes about pie into a work that would give them some permanence. I mean, Jonathan Swift's Promises and Pie Crust Are Made to Be Broken, that has its own permanence. But maybe George W. Bush's We Ought to Make the Pie Higher does not yet have the permanence it deserves. He often accidentally said beautiful things.
Well, here's your opportunity to give it that prominence.
Great.
It deserves.
You want me to read some?
Yes.
Okay. So these are some of the quotes from the book that were worked in. We ought to make the pie higher. George W. Bush.
In what context did he say
that? He was talking about, if this was in a political speech, and I think he was talking about opportunity and trying to give people more of it. But instead, he just butchered it with one of our, you know, very American phrases, pie in the sky, adding a bit of, you know, moral angst. We ought. And then mixing it up with a pie chart and this idea of everyone needs a should have a slice of the pie. So in the end, pie in the sky is higher than anyone can reach. Just such a bummer, right? But like, ironically, maybe betrayed what he meant. Who knows? Oh, these are some of my favorites. Don't go into Mr. McGregor's garden. Your father had an accident there. He was put into a pie. It's Beatrix Potter.
Very good wisdom.
Oh, this is a good example of really precise imagery and music in an aphoristic phrase. A triangle of pie is the best way ever discovered to round out a square meal. And of course, that's a bunch of puns, too. The Farm Journal's Complete Pie Cookbook. That's from 1965. A boy doesn't have to go to war to be a hero. He can say he doesn't like pie when he sees there isn't enough to go around. Edgar Watson Howe. Paul Valéry, he says, science means simply the aggregate of all the recipes that are always successful. All the rest is literature.
I love that.
Isn't that wonderful?
You have a section that's titled Notes on Pie. So we've already talked about the ice water. Talk about the other methods.
So the idea with the Notes on Pie section, in part, is to kind of introduce this bossy voice that is telling you how to make pie. The I in the poems is not me, but the I in these recipes is much closer to me. It kind of has to be. Recipes are, they derive their expertise from whoever is telling you them. And so I kind of need, me being the expert, wanted to be closer to those.
So this is the pie teacher coming
in.
Okay.
Let me really explore the ways that recipes kind of contain our knowledge, communicate knowledge, but that also how the person who's writing them is holding their knowledge, I guess. Like, how am I going to, I had to take the stance of an expert, for example, when I was writing these, where before perhaps I wasn't that comfortable just being an expert. But if you're going to tell someone how to do it, you got to tell them so they believe it. You got to have some authority.
Yeah, I don't think I'd want to read a recipe from someone who wasn't quite convinced this is the way I needed to do it.
Right. Right.
Explain the vodka method. I like this one.
Oh, sure. So that's a method that what you do is you use vodka, ice vodka, instead of ice water. And gluten doesn't develop in the presence of vodka where it does with water. And as you bake it, all that vodka just evaporates off. So it can make very, very flaky, easy to handle dough. It's something that Cooks Illustrated became really popular for. I don't use it because I can't keep vodka in my house.
Long enough
to bake with. So I just stick to water.
And you have some opinions about lard and butter and Crisco.
Oh, yeah.
Those, I think, are very important.
Absolutely. So you can make pie dough with any kind of saturated fat that's solid at room temperature. Butter is just the simplest, the classic way to go. It's delicious. It creates really flaky dough. Lard creates even flakier dough, and it is also even more delicious, I think, in combination with butter. But you have to find the right stuff. You can't just get any old lard at any old grocery store. You have to get leaf lard. Leaf lard is gathered from around the pig's kidneys and is more pure than the rest of the lard that might be fat from all sorts of other parts of the pig. It doesn't taste piggy. If you smell it, it's almost kind of sweet. And you have to ask for that specially at the butcher shop. Combine that with butter, and it just makes the best pie dough you'll ever have. Crisco works, and it's cheap, and it's easy to find, and, you know, it's got triglycerides, I suppose, or they've been taken out. I haven't really kept up on that. I know it's not popular anymore because we've really kind of gone back from processed food to more natural types of food. Pie isn't a health food. It's just not.
Which is why we don't eat it every day.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. And I think trying to treat it as a health food just ruins the whole point. So Crisco makes really, really flaky crust, but it's pretty tasteless. I just go straight butter. Keep it simple. It's delicious. It's natural. Butter also, using the method that I use, is easier to roll out. for some reason.
Let's talk about rolling out, because that is a problem for some people.
It is.
You get the crust made and you put the darn thing on the counter and you start rolling and pieces are going everywhere and it's tearing off. And how do you
it's a mess.
Keep that from happening?
Well, you got to stay cool. You have to stay cool. Your dough has to stay cool. It should have rested in the fridge for at least an hour so that the gluten could relax and so that the fat could go back to a nice chilled temperature. You want to take it out and just give it a good whack with your rolling pin. Whack it a couple times so that it's flatter to the countertop. I think by the time I'm done whacking it, it's really only like an inch, inch and a half off the countertop anymore. And I whack it from different angles so that the dough remains round. And then the secret is to make sure everything is well floured, not over floured, and roll from the center out. And you want to go, you don't want to go too fast and you don't want to go too slow. Just roll from the center out, from the center in, and then you turn your dough and you do it again. Because the center is always going to be thicker than the edges. If you roll at the edges, you're going to get super thin edges, very thick center. It's going to drive you crazy. So roll from the center and stop right before you get to the edge. That helps.
And then how do you pick it up and get it in your pie plate without it falling apart?
So the recipe that I've got in this book is going to create a dough that is pliable, that it's almost like it's like a cold fabric in a way. So you'll roll it out so that it's a half or an eighth of an inch thick, and you'll actually be able to fold it into quarters and lift it up and put it in your pie plate. I know it's hard to believe, but it's totally true. Another secret of mine is to use a pastry scraper. It's also called a bench scraper. I use that. I slide that underneath the dough every couple rolls to make sure that it's not sticking to the countertop. And I also use that pastry scraper to fold it and to lift it, because it's not only does it not have body heat, but it's slightly more precise. It's got this really flat edge that's easy to measure, easy to maneuver.
This is such a cool book.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's a fun book. I learned a lot of interesting things, and the quotes are great. And you get pie recipes. There are several recipes in the back for pie crust and for different kinds of fruit pies. Cherry rhubarb pie. Yep. Sounds really good.
That's one of my favorites.
Maple blueberry pie.
All the tastes of breakfast except for bacon.
Kate Lebo lives and makes pie near Portland, Oregon. There's more information about her at our blog, which you'll find at mtpr.org/twq. Also there, a link to audio so you can listen again or share this program with a friend, and links to the Right Questions podcast and Facebook page. Thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Cherie Newman wishing you a pile of fascinating books and lots of questions.
The Right Question is produced by Cherie Newman, with help from Barbara Thoreau and Kim Anderson. Michael Marsalek, executive producer. Beth Ann Austin, studio engineer. Music for this program was written and performed by John Floridis. The Right Question has a Facebook page, a blog, and a podcast. You'll find links to all that at mtpr.org/twq. Thanks for listening and for supporting this program.